What's up, No Nation? It's the guys from Plant the Spear back with you for another episode. Thank you for tuning in. We are back to our normal setup now. Thank goodness. Michael is back, and I've been dealing with the flu a little bit lately. So, like I thought a couple episodes ago was my flu game podcast. Turns out it was just hiding in the bushes waiting for me. So now we are back to our normal recording cycle. So we got a lot to get into today, guys. Obviously, we know college baseball has been really consuming our fan base lately. So we're going to put a bow on that. Unfortunately, Florida State's season does end in Omaha, but we're going to go through that a little bit. And then we're going to kind of catch up on some football news and some things like that. The ACC lawsuit has a few updates. So we are going to jump right in. But before we get into that, Michael, thank you so much for joining me. I'm glad to have you back. And how are you doing, my friend?
Thanks, Jesse. Thanks for having me back. Yeah, I was on another continent across the world in Africa, just doing some stuff with our organization, our church. And so, but was able to tune in and cheer on the Noles from the other continent. Watched the Super Regionals from Africa, which was kind of a cool That's moment. Crazy. Texting you. It was like 3 or 4 in the morning when it was, you know, 9 or 10 over here, but was able to follow the Noles, and man, what an incredible season. I know we'll get into that, but yeah, it's good to be back.
That's dedication, man. 3 or 4 in the morning, you know, just hiding from zebras and lions and all that stuff. Hopefully you did some recruiting while you were over there. Got us a few new commits. But yeah, man, so we're gonna jump right into this baseball recap. You know, Florida State, when you look at this baseball team, look, I tweeted about this the other day. I know there's a lot of people that are disappointed in the moment, and there's reason to be frustrated. We'll just kind of recap the College World Series first, but I think there's so many reasons to be proud, excited, happy about this team, what they accomplished, and the direction of the program. I mean, of course, when you look at what they did in Omaha, yes, man, I get it. It's frustrating. 24 trips, still coming up empty-handed. I get it. But what they've done going from last year to this year is such a huge turnaround that you just have to be excited about the direction of the program. But when you look at what they did in Omaha, I mean, they opened things up with a game against Tennessee that we knew was going to be a blockbuster matchup. We did the preview here on this channel. We talked about how this was going to be a slugfest, high-scoring, action-packed game. It was in primetime and nighttime. And frankly, this team came out and gave Tennessee the number one program in the country right now. Yes. The only team who has won 50 games, 50 plus games in 3 of the last 4 seasons going into Omaha. I think maybe Texas A&M might have crossed that mark now, but this is a really good program. They're not number one for nothing, and you gave them all you wanted in that first game. And of course, we know there's the controversial call. I mean, I know it's going to sound like, you know, before everyone says I'm just crying about the refs. Yes, that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm crying about the refs. It's fine. Because it sucks, man, because that really did change the outcome of things. And it's like you like to say all the time, Michael, two things can be true at the same
time.
One, yes, we blew the game. I mean, we had them on the ropes. All you had to do, you were in the bottom of the ninth with 2 outs. All you had to do was get 1 out. You still had the lead. When the call was made, you still had the lead. You hadn't blown the lead yet. So you still could have won the game. And two, it's also true that that call cost FSU the game in that particular moment. The game would have been over. The lead would have never been blown, and you would have won. And the reason I think that that's so huge was because, one, it sent you to the loser's bracket, but two, it also, it really hurt you in the way that you couldn't afford to be hurt. And, you know, someone, when I was on the College Huddle ACC podcast before this episode or before the World Series, they asked me, how does Florida State win? They've won if, and I said, if they stay in the winner's bracket because of the bullpen depth. Something we knew was going to be a problem going into this. And so when that call happened and you did not win that game, you changed the way you had to use your bullpen because you had an extra game. Had that call went your way, I don't know, maybe you don't use Connor Whitaker against UNC. Maybe you save him for that the start against the Tennessee. But either way, man, I still think when you look at they gave all they wanted to the number one team in the country. Then you come out and you beat a very good UVA team. Yep. You turn around and you beat the ACC regular champion, UNC. And then really, when you look at that last Tennessee game, which first off, in the UNC game, shout out to Armstrong, man, coming out there with a, like a strain in his ribs, in his in his midsection, and to just throw through the pain and give FSU one heck of an outing, man. Tip of the cap to him. And then, of course, you know, you come back in that last game against Tennessee and you have to start a freshman who hasn't pitched.
That's right.
You know, in quite a while, and things didn't go well. And so, man, it's just, I think, and I'll kick it to you on this, but I think when you look at what happened in Omaha, and we'll talk about the growth from year one to year two under Link Jarrett in just a second. But when you look at Omaha in a bubble, I still think when you with the way they fought, that gave Tennessee a fight, the way they bounced back and beat UVA and UNC, because honestly, after a gut-wrenching loss like that, it would have been easy to fold it in and go. Oh, yeah,
absolutely.
I think it pissed them off. And, and I think what was most frustrating to me was it was just, I think Tennessee got in their heads. I think they, and I hate to say this, I think they were a little intimidated by what they knew they were facing, because you saw very uncharacteristic mistakes in that first game. And in the fourth game, you didn't see those mistakes against UVA. You didn't see those against UNC. Base running mistakes, you know, fielding mistakes, all these little things that ended up costing them the game. But at the end of the day, man, I know it stinks, but you made it to the final four teams in the country. You had swept a team who was right there in the final five with Florida. You had already swept them. So, man, it was still a pretty good showing. It's just you knew when you ran into that Tennessee team, it was going to be a really tough ask, especially in that second game where, you know, we really didn't even know who was going to pitch leading into that game. Absolutely. So I'll let you share some thoughts on Omaha as a whole, man. But either way, man, I think they really showed up. They just, man, they came up a little bit short. And unfortunately, they played their worst baseball against the best team twice.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, I'll start here, is that we have to give credit where credit is due. Florida State was a 23-win team last season. Missed the NCAA tournament for the first time in, gosh, who knows how long.
40-plus years.
40-plus years of program history. You know, Link was, you know, people were questioning, is he the right guy? Is this more of what, you know, Meat had and we're going to carry on? And then, you know, Link goes into the transfer portal, and he completely revamps his team. We double our wins. We not only, you know, compete for the ACC, we're in the ACC championship tournament game. We cruise through the regionals. We cruise through the super regional. We get to the College World Series. I mean, that's an incredible job by that coaching staff, by the team, by everybody that's a part of that program. So you're not going to hear me say, you know, a lot of terrible things about this. This is only a cuss. I think I tweeted out afterwards is that, you know, Link's got us. He's got this program back where it should be. He knows where the weaknesses are. I think you've already said or told me that we've got a couple arms already signed for next year. We're going to replace those bats. I saw an interview where Link was talking about even during the College World Series, when they had some time, they were already looking at the 4,600 players that are already in the transfer portal already for baseball. And so they're going to find the right players. I would not doubt that Florida State would be right back in this position, hosting a regional next year, potentially getting to a super regional and to the College World Series again. With that being said, as you've said, multiple things can be true at the same time. Florida State, we knew that if Florida State had to go to the bullpen, especially against Tennessee, there was going to be trouble. There was Tennessee is the best team in the country, and I don't like Tennessee baseball, but I will admit they are the best team in the country. My goodness. They've been one of the best teams in the country for the last several years, and they're proving it again this year. They've gone undefeated in the postseason so far. That their bats are as electric as anything. Their pitching, you know, they can shut people down when they want to. Obviously, against Florida State in that first game, Florida State was hot. The bats were hot. We were hitting everything they were throwing at us. It was incredible. But that call, and we talked about this in the pre-show, that call changed the game, because Florida State was down, had Tennessee down to its last out and its last strike.
Yep.
If that call gets made, and it's not just the check swing call that everybody wants to talk about. It's not just that. But if you go back and watch that play, that was a strike. That was a clear strike that Oxford threw. And it should have been an out. It should have been over with. That should have been done. So they don't call the strike. Then they go to the third base ump for the appeal of the check swing. Every image you look at, he went around. He went. The rule book, somebody posted the rule book on Twitter, and it clearly states that if the bat comes to a full swing out in front as an offering, it is considered a swing. It should have been an out. That call changed the trajectory of the game. Now, the other thing that's true, like you said, Florida State still had an 11-9 lead at that point. They still had a chance to get out. They still had a chance to win this game and stay in the winner's bracket. And Jesse, you know as well as I do, I believe right now that if they had won that game, they would be playing in the championship series right now, because no one was stopping this team. This offense was hot. They had the pitching set up the best way they could have for this team. But they don't get out. They don't get out of that inning. They give up the hits, the runs, the walks. Tennessee gets a walk off, and you know the rest is history. I will also say too that as much credit is due to Link and the coaching and the strategy and the decisions he made, there were some questionable decisions. Like, why take out Whitaker right there? Yes, he had given up a couple walks, but he was hot. He was good. He's one of your best arms. I know you're worried about stretching him. I know his health is a play. And listen, I always will say you should err to the side of the player for the player health. Mm-hmm. But in that moment, he looked good. I believed he still could have got out of that inning. I still believe he could have got us to the finish line. So I question that. I question going right there to Oxford in that moment. Why not go to Holes if you're worried, if you're thinking that this could be a blown lead? Why not go to your best closer, your best reliever in that moment?
Right. And I would even say, like, in that vein, and again, you got to give credit to Link Jarrett and the staff for what they did.
Right.
I don't think I would have pulled Jamie Arnold in the fifth. I think I would have let him go to the sixth, and then I would have let Whitaker go 7, 8, 9, because no offense to Brendan Oxford, but like when he came in the I think it was super regional, he could not hit UConn. The strike zone.
Nope.
Right. He could not hit the strike zone. And so then you brought him in, you know, and he kind of did exactly what he did in that game. So, yeah, man, there are arguments that you could make for both sides. There was some mismanagement. Yeah. There was Jackson West drops the ball at home that cost you a run.
The missed base.
The missed base. Like, there were so many uncharacteristic mistakes made by this team. But yeah, man, I totally agree. That you know, that call by old Boo Corrigan on third base, I'm pretty sure that was him. You know, like,
I'm sure it was him.
Like they did with you know, Scooby Doo, where they had to pull the mask off to see who it is. Like, that was probably him out there on third base.
It's
that
made you, Boo.
Right. But it changed the entire trajectory of how you had to use things. So, man, I'm with you. Like, we made so many mistakes in that game that was so frustrating to watch that this is true for the second game against Tennessee too. It wasn't so much that we lost. It's how we lost. It's because this was not FSU baseball. This is not the way they played all season. And so, man, it was tough. And even then, like, when you look at what Tennessee had, their best hitter, Christian Moore, hit the cycle in the first game. Please. Just, I mean, could not miss the ball in the second game. And your two top bats going into this went 5 of 33 with 10 strikeouts in Omaha. It's hard to win like that.
That's correct. So,
yeah, I mean, there was a lot of things that were on us, but that did change the game. That changed the trajectory of the remainder of the tournament in that moment. Like you said, I feel like if they had gotten that strike three call, either way, whether it was on the pitch or the swing, which, you know, for what it's worth, they came back and did a less far swing as a strike in another game. So, like, the consistency wasn't there, but I think they're playing in the championship if they do that. But, you know, man, I just think when you look at this program, when the winningest coach in baseball history, college baseball history, Mike Martin, he made it 23 times and did not win. Link Jarrett made it one time and finished in the Final Four. There's no reason to pile on this team. No. Now, again, like we said, there are some questionable things that maybe we wouldn't have done, but we're not the baseball coach. We don't get paid what he gets paid to make the decisions. Right. We don't know. I know everyone wanted Arnold to throw against Tennessee, but maybe he wasn't ready. And like you said, you always have to err on the side of caution, because you don't want him to go out and blow his arm out. Because guess what? He's going to be back next year.
Well, Link said that in the post game. They asked him, you know, did you consider pitching Arnold? And they said, we went to Arnold and asked. And he said that his arm wasn't ready. And listen, you can only take the word of the player. And like, you throw him out there, you force him out there, and he blows his arm and he blows his career. Yeah, you're going to feel responsible for that. And as a coach, man, you don't want to put a kid in a harm's way of doing that. And
you'll explain that on the recruiting trail too.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, guys. I'm gonna recruit you, and I'm gonna blow you out until we can't use you anymore, because we only care about wins here. And that's important. But you also want to keep the health of the kid in play. And this is not Major League Baseball. You know, these kids don't recover as fast as those Major League pitchers do on 3 days rest when they're in the playoff. This is not that. And so you have to go with what you had. You know, we can look back and we can question all we want. Here's the thing. Florida State finished in the Final Four of all of college baseball, of the 170 something teams out there, Florida State finished in the final four, the top four. Okay. Now I saw something just real quick. I want to address this real quick. I saw a Florida fan posted how Florida finished third in this College World Series. You realize there is first and there's runner up. There is no third or fourth. So to you Florida fans out there, you're just darn lucky you were able to even get into the College World Series. We swept you. Just remember that. We swept you this year. And had you played us, we would have taken your butt back to the swamp and made you gator meat. So
right, like you can have the third place if you want, but we swept you during the regular season.
We swept you during the regular season, so it doesn't matter. Florida State finished fourth in the top four of all of college baseball. No one, not even us, Florida State fans, predicted they would finish in the final four. So for them to go to the final four, for them to play themselves again, Jesse, out of the loser's bracket to the bracket final was incredible. And we need to give them their flowers. They're going to be back, and I can't wait to cheer them on next season.
Right. This is one of the best offenses in college baseball, and they showed why. Now, you're going to lose some power going into next year, but at the same time, I do want to give a shout-out to Carson Dorsey, who was probably your postseason MVP on as far as defensive player. I mean, he just the work that he put in on the mound, after being a little bit inconsistent and kind of forced into a starting role that maybe he wasn't projected to be in that throughout the season – man, he really stepped up huge. And then you also had Jaime Ferrer, who I want to give the offensive postseason player. Man, I mean, that dude was so clutch for Florida State whenever their best hitters were not. But
that's right.
I think when you look at this team going forward, now that we've kind of shared our thoughts on Omaha, again, you cannot lose sight of the improvement year over year that this team made. Now, I understand it was Link's team last year, and so he gets a part of the blame. It's just what's so crazy, man, is this baseball team and this football team are so tied at the hip. Yes. When you look at how they did it, what they did, Mike Norvell gets the blame for those first two seasons being terrible. He was still the coach.
That's right.
But he inherited some other mess. And I think when you look at this program, I was talking about this with somebody the other day. When he came in, you had another similar situation to football. There were so many rumors, reports, or things like that. Nothing against the guy. I know he bleeds garnet and gold, and he wanted the best for this program. But Meat was not the easiest coach to play for. There was a lot of rumors where parents were not happy with how things were going in the locker room, where it was a mass exodus for people to get out of here because they didn't have fun playing baseball at Florida State under Meat. So you come into a situation that wasn't great, and you salvage the team that was ready to kind of fall apart.
Right.
Then you only have one recruiting cycle to fix this thing, realistically, because he came in kind of late, because they had to make that change.
That's right.
And he was also still in the tournament with Notre Dame. So he had to finish that before he came here. So, I mean, when you look at the situation that he took over and to go do so bad in 2023, again, 23-31, 9-21 in the ACC, 17-13 at home. And then you look at what they did this year in one recruiting cycle. 49-17, 17-12 in the ACC, 32-4 inside Hauser. Kids. You cannot
The season 19-0.
19-0, swept both of your rivals. And even when you just look at the improvement year over year from the players that they developed, not only the transfers that they brought in to help, but I mean, you look at the home runs last year was 55. This year it was 131.
Yeah.
RBIs last year, 291. This year, 531. Your batting average last year went from 276 as a team to 315. We obviously saw improvements in the bullpen as well as, as maybe not great as it was.
Right.
It's better than it was last year. And a lot of that due to injury. And I think people also have to understand, too, that they had to deal with injuries this year, too. I mean, imagine I would have given my big toe to have Cam Leiter out there.
Yes.
I need my big toe.
Yeah, you might need your big toe.
but I would have maybe given my little toe, to have him be able to be in this rotation. Because when you look at Cam Leiter, he was electric to start. Now, I understand we didn't play a ton of difficult teams early, but he is still currently, at the end of the season, fourth in strikeouts in this team, even though he had the second fewest appearances in only seven games. So you lost one of your most electric arms, really, before even midway during the season. Connor Whitaker dealt with that. You had Gavin Adams, who was out, who is a guy that can throw 96, 97. You were already behind the eight ball. So for them to be able to take what they had, and go as far as they did,
yep,
you just can't be anything but impressed by this team. Now, absolutely, I know there's going to be a little bit of a reset next year. You're going to lose guys like Tibbs. You're going to lose guys like Smith, Cam Smith from the lineup, from your power. But, you know, you have a good opportunity to bring some guys back. And, you know, I was about this with someone the other day. It's pretty well known that minor league baseball players' lives are pretty rough.
Yeah,
it's not a good, it's not a good career. And so this is something that, like with football, again, to tie it into football, you may have guys who might be an undrafted free agent that decide to stay in college because they're living a better life in college.
And with NIL now, they can make just as much money as they would in minor league baseball.
Exactly. And with this house settlement, if it ends up changing, this may not affect this year, but going forward, where all these baseball players can be on scholarship now.
Yeah.
Then you may have some guys that opt to stay if they're not going to be a high draft pick. Now, the ones you worry about, like Carson Dorsey, he could come back. He's already a high draft pick. But I know people are worried about the bullpen. The bullpen should be good, really good next year, because you could have Cam Leiter. You could have Jamie Arnold back. You could have, I mean, when you look at all the guys that could come back, you know, you could have Joe Charles come back. He's only a junior. Connor Whitaker's only a junior, dealt with injury. He could be back as well.
That's right.
They've already got three pitchers signed from the transfer portal, two from Jacksonville.
And they're going to go USF, more. Yeah.
And they've barely even been recruiting yet. So, man, I just think when you look at what they did last year to where they've come this year, man, this is just such a massive turnaround. And this might be our first College World Series under Link Jarrett. It certainly will not be the last.
Oh,
and so I without it, I'm not going to guarantee something that you can't guarantee, but I'm pretty confident that if Florida State is to win their first national title, it's going to be under Link Jarrett in the next few years because, man, you know, again, when you look at what he had going up against the teams that they went up against, they really had no business going as far as they did. And so the fact that they did, man, when he really gets his guys and they build that bullpen depth, which is something that Tennessee has.
That's right.
When you get that lineup that he wants, the way he gets it, the way he wants it, Michael Posey's been great as a pitching coach, man. These guys are going to really take off with this program. I mean, it's hard to do better than top four already.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Man, I don't envision once they get a couple recruiting cycles under their belt, things are, it's just going to be just like football. You're going to see it's, you know, you're supposed to do a slow climb, but man, they springboarded right into success.
They sure did.
This year.
The difference is, with football, you know, it took Mike 4 years to get that 10-3, 4 years, sorry, 2020, 2021, 2022. Took Mike 3 years to get that 10-3 record. And then obviously last year with the 13-1, whatever you want to call it, record for sure. It took Link two seasons to get back there.
Right.
And if Link could do that in two seasons, I'm just giddy to see what he does with season three and season four.
Yeah.
I mean, who's to say? Like you said, we're not going to guarantee that they're going to win a title. I'm not going to guarantee they'll get back to the College World Series. But I bet you a lot of money that I bet they would get back there and sooner rather than later, too.
Oh, exactly, man. I'm just excited for the direction of the program. And I mean, I think Link has shown his ability to coach and develop the players and go out and identify talent. I mean, a lot of these guys come from, you know, community college or junior college. These are JUCO guys. So if you can go out and find those, and Florida State baseball has always been a desirable place to play. But, you know, after those last few years, it was really kind of looking rough. So, man, just to have that big of a turnaround, it's insane to even see that at any level in any sport. So I'm just super excited, but that's pretty much going to put a bow on baseball season. Obviously, we're going to have to wait to see who declares for the draft, who enters the portal, who they get before we can start looking at next year. But man, I mean, this team's not going anywhere. Like you said, they're going to be good. So before we transition into football, Michael, I'm going to let you know that who you can rely on every year, and that's Alumni Hall FSU, our sponsor for today's show. And guys, I get a lot of comments for those of you watching on YouTube that they like the hat that I wear when we record. Man, if you go to Alumni Hall, they have over 50 different kinds, and they have this new, it's the brand name called Puka. It's weird. I never heard of it. But, man, they have some sick, like, throwback hats. So if you're into throwback, you're an old logo lifer, like I know a lot of people are, man, they have some absolute bangers over there. So you guys are going to want to go check that out. Get those at a great price with code SPEAR to get 10% off. And, you know, hopefully we're going to have some exciting things coming up with those guys as well as we get closer to football season. So we appreciate you guys supporting those that support us. 1415 Timberlane Road in Tallahassee or alumnihall.com. Navigate over to the FSU page and use code SPEAR to get 10% off. So go check those out. But now let's get into some football news. As you guys know, it is the slow season. You know, when baseball ended, it was like, that really got us through a portion of the summer.
It did.
You know, tip of the cap to baseball for making the summer not so boring. But I tweeted out that it was like, I tweeted out a picture of Osceola and Renegade, and I said, next stop, football season.
That's right.
It is time. Before you know it, we'll be kicking this thing off. But that doesn't mean there's a lot to talk about, because there's not a whole lot going on right now. We know the dead period is coming up. This is the last week before the dead period. So it's a huge recruiting time for Florida State. There's also been some ACC versus FSU lawsuit updates, which we'll touch on real quick. I'll just kind of share what I got. I'll let you share what you got, and we'll go from there. There's not been any massive groundbreaking stuff, although, you know, you saw Josh Pate. He tweeted out the other day a picture of like a glass shaking with the ACC. So it's like maybe there's something behind the scenes that we just don't know. But right now, it looks like so far in the North Carolina case, the ACC did make their argument this week to the North Carolina Supreme Court against the appeal filed by FSU for a stay, which is delaying the case of the trial in North Carolina. Now, in Leon County, Florida State did get a win as Judge Cooper denied the ACC's request to halt the case based on jurisdiction being should be in North Carolina, because he argues that you're doing business in Tallahassee. There was, you know, I think he cited something like 700 games or something like that, you know, per year happened in the state of Florida. That's kind of doing business.
That's kind of doing business. Not in just the games, the bowl games, the tournaments, for all sports.
Exactly. So you are definitely doing business there. So that was a big win for Florida State down there to deny that request. Now, there are still some other complaints that are in litigation there. The ACC, of course, is expected to file appeal in the high court, just like FSU did. These things operate in lockstep. It's just two different venues. Yeah. So we're going to have to wait to see how things, you know, play out between these two. Man, it's just so interesting. Like, man, I say, you know what? This is too complicated. Let's just have the judges like strap it up for a good old fashioned Oklahoma drill to decide jurisdiction. You know, like let's just see what happens. Or better yet, man, let's just save the courts aside and let's just let Michael Alford and Jim Phillips suit up and go through Oklahoma drill. My money's on Alford. I think he's giving Phillips the truck.
Alford played football at Oklahoma, so you know, I think he'd win.
Yeah, he's giving Phillips the truck stick. So he's a Northwestern guy. You know, they're kind of soft. So. you know, but jokes aside, man, this is just such a long, drawn out process. But there were a couple of updates that we wanted to share. You know, and again, good news for Florida State in the Leon County case. So I don't know if you have any additional details to share on this, maybe things you've heard that I missed here. But I'll open the floor to you and let you share what you have on this.
Nothing much. I mean, these three counts that got dismissed by the Leon County judge against the ACC were huge. It's a step in the right direction for Florida State. But, you know, as they talk about in war, you have battles and then you have the war. And so this was a battle that FSU had won, you know, after FSU had lost some battles to the ACC. But the war is not over. One of the things, and I'll throw this back to you because this is really the only update I have, is one of the things that I thought was really key, though, was if you go back and read the transcript, the judge says that he implores both sides to begin mediation again. And he says mediation isn't always the end all, but mediation is usually the beginning of a settlement. And I just thought that was key that the judge would say that. Because I think he sees it as we've all said, that this whole thing is really geared toward getting Florida State and the ACC to the table to say, okay, what is the number? What is the number that we could both be comfortable with so we can say peace out to this thing, right? And, you know, they argued that, you know, the $140 million is a penalty for leaving. And the judge said, hey, you know, the ACC lawyer even said Florida State can leave at any point in time. No one's holding them here. Well, if that's the case, then why do we need to charge a penalty? Why do we need to charge an exit fee? Why are there media rights, you know, somewhere north of $400+ million that they would have to pay you guys? See, you're actually defeating yourself by saying that.
Right.
And so what is the number that the ACC and Florida State would be comfortable with both exiting the conference? And so I thought that was key, Jesse, for them, for that judge to say that. And I think that's just another step towards Florida State and ACC coming to the settlement table.
Yeah, and there has been another development, but I don't want to speak on something that I haven't had time to do research on. Again, guys, forgive me. I have been probably waist deep in baseball for the last last month or so. And also, obviously, like I said, I had the flu, so I wasn't doing a whole heck of a lot there. But there has been some things that I've seen across social media, and I'll have this hopefully for you in the next episode, but it looks like this whole grant of rights thing, there's really something to this, what Clemson's lawsuit is claiming, but that basically the grant of rights is good as long as you're a conference member. But once you're out of the conference, it's basically only an agreement with that ESPN contract. So you basically take your rights with you when you leave. And so, like I said, I've seen a lot of talk about that. I haven't had time to really dig into it. But I think that's where the cryptic tweets about the ACC falling apart and things like that is because I think the grant of rights is not ironclad like they made it sound like it was going to be. I think this is going to be once you get out of the ACC, which again, it may even be to where you negotiate on that penalty number, you see what that number comes to, and then once you get out of that, your media rights are your own to shop around.
Yeah,
that's so right. I think that is a recent development that has given people a lot of positivity about Florida State getting out of the ACC. But again, I'll have to do some more research on that and follow up with you guys. Yeah. But you know, I was going to say, I think that if you find that way, you know, if you can just get out of here, then if you can break that grant of rights, man, I mean, you're as good as gone. And I think that there have been a lot of contingencies set up for that to happen. But yeah, man, I think if that is obviously the argument, and that is what Clemson went after in their lawsuit thing. So I'll have to do some research on that. But that is what I've seen so far, that the grant of rights may not be as solid as they think it is.
Well, that would make sense. I mean, if you leave the conference, you're no longer a member of the conference. And so everything with you should be able to go with you. If it's your proprietary property, you should be able to take it with you. And your media rights are your proprietary property. So the ACC can't just, it'd be like you, Jesse, you know, leaving, selling your house and saying, I'm out. And you left like some family albums there. And the new owner's like, well, you left. You left in the house. It's mine. No. It's still mine. Like, it's still belongs to me. Yeah. And so FSU, if that ends up being the case, if that ends up being true, then man, FSU has even more of a leg to stand on to say, hey, we're out, whatever that number is, we'll figure it out, but we're out of here, right? And it's less that. I just want to make one correction. Alford went to, he was a Mississippi State. He was the AD at Oklahoma. He didn't play at Oklahoma.
Well, either way, I think he's giving old Phillips the truck stick.
I bet he is.
But yeah, man. But you know, the crazy thing about this whole thing, really, when you look at the ACC, is it's so kind of disheartening that the ACC, their life played out like it did. Because, man, if you look at, and this is, again, why I think this is going to be like a Pac-12 year for the ACC. It's going to be like one boom and then a bust.
Yep.
You had three of the final eight teams in basketball this year. You had four of the final eight teams in baseball this year. Mm. You should have had one of the final four teams in football this year.
Mm.
And so it's like, man, it's not really necessarily about the ACC not being competitive. Well, a lot of that has to do with football. It's more about what the other two power conferences have done. They have just surpassed you in revenue. They have went out and added these great teams. I mean, I saw something the other day where like, I think SMU, the newest member of the ACC, they raised over $100 million in their athletic department for this transition. So, like, there is so much potential in the ACC to get this right, to build this into a power conference.
Right.
But because of poor leadership and poor marketing by this conference,
poor decisions,
they have laid their bed for this to take a good thing and turn it bad. So, like, it's unfortunate that it had to turn out this way. But man, I mean, it's crazy that I saw this tweet about how successful the ACC has basically been in every sport, almost except football. You know, but when you look at Clemson and what they did, and then look at Florida State and what they should have been allowed to do last year, it's crazy how much success they have. And everybody's like, well, the ACC isn't as bad as people say. Well, no, it's not on the field, on the competitive standpoint.
Right.
But that ain't the problem. The problem is the revenue, and the revenue gap has never been insurmountable until now going forward.
Well, you look at the sports that matter, and I don't mean an offense to any other sport, you know, swimming and tennis and all those sports, like, you guys do a great job. But the sports that matter, so baseball, softball, basketball, football, those are the four. I would call those the major four, right? The ACC outside of football is right there with the SEC in all those sports, if not better in soccer. I mean, we put you know, women's soccer championship is literally basically the ACC tournament all over again.
Exactly, almost all the
time, you know, with Stanford coming into play. You look at baseball, you know, like you said, we had three of the top eight were ACC baseball teams. You look at basketball and the Final Four, and you had the ACC all over it. ACC is usually one of the best basketball conferences year in and year out. With football, you know, it's been Clemson or it's been Florida State. It's usually just one of those two that's been there. The problem has been not necessarily the competition on the field, but the competency of leadership in the office and the front office. That has been the problem over and over again for the last 20 years with the ACC, starting with Swofford and now with Jim Phillips. It has not been great leadership. It has been terrible marketing. Your two best programs, and let's just be real, Clemson has carried, you know, let's give Clemson their flower. They've carried the ACC for the last couple, for the previous six or so years. But before that, it was Florida State. It was Florida State carrying this conference, and the ACC did everything in their power to mark down, to belittle, to dismiss Florida State's supremacy of the conference because they wanted to be fair and equitable to everybody else. You know what the SEC did? They promoted Alabama when Alabama was dominating. They promoted LSU when LSU was dominating. They promoted Florida when Florida was dominating. Now look at that. Georgia is dominating, and they're putting Georgia right at the top. When Texas and Oklahoma get in there, they're going to do the same thing if they start dominating. You see, that is what good leadership is. As much as we don't like Greg Sankey or Sankey or Sankey or whatever his name is, the dude is doing his job. And that's where the ACC has failed. It's not about the competition on the field outside of football. It's about the competency of leadership in the front office.
No, I mean, you're 100% correct. And really, I know they've tried to force some of these schools to focus on football. And I mean, there is, so you look at, there's two main brands in football. I mean, no one predicted that Miami and Virginia Tech were going to flop like they did. Correct. And Virginia Tech was good early. They had some problems. They're still recovering from that, inside of their athletic department. But I mean, what is the SEC without Alabama? What is the SEC without LSU? I mean, it's
correct.
I think the difference between the two is you have like Alabama, Florida, LSU. Right. Alabama, Georgia. So, like, there's other teams that sneak up and win. I mean, Ole Miss has never won anything. Mississippi State's never won anything. Vanderbilt is a doormat. You know, Tennessee hasn't really been relevant in football
since '99. Yeah.
Right. In 20 years. But the problem is, it's either Clemson or Florida State and then the rest. No one has ever, like, again, NC State, one of the, what you would say, premier programs. They won 10 games one time in school history. North Carolina is just, I mean, they are the most inconsistent program I've ever seen probably in college football. So, like, if you could just get a couple more of these schools to compete at the football level, this conference could be great. But like you said, it's just, I think it's so far gone now that with the poor leadership and the poor marketing that it's unsalvageable. I think they had an opportunity early on when this started. Yes. I think it's too far gone now because there's just nothing they're going to be able to do about these gaps in the revenue. And so you got to find your way out. But man, that's a side talking point that it's like when you saw the success that they had, it's like, man, the ACC could have been had it just had competent leadership, had like you said, if Greg Sankey had taken over the ACC, who knows? You know, they went out and got Texas and Oklahoma. The Big Ten, Tony Vitti, I think his name is, he went out and grabbed all these prominent programs. And then what do?
From the
Stanford,
Pac-12.
Cal, SMU. Like, why didn't you go get West Virginia? Why didn't you go get UCF before they went to the Big 12? Why didn't you go do all these things? You sat on your hands and waited for everyone else to make a move. And so now you're going to have to sit on the mess that you made.
And here's the thing, like people forget this because, you know, we are a prisoner of recency bias. We're prisoners of the moment now, tyranny of the urgent, you know, but you go back into the 90s, the SEC wasn't this dominant football conference. No. I mean, you know, you didn't have an SEC team outside of Florida that was really any in the national conversation. You remember Alabama had oh, I can't even think of his name. They were right before Nick Saban got there. I mean, they were terrible. They were a laughingstock of the SEC. Right. Georgia, Mark Richt had been bringing them out of the basement. You know, Florida is in the Ron Zook era. You remember the Ron Zook era?
Oh, man.
I mean, it was Nebraska. It was Florida State. It was Miami. It was Michigan. Those were the big teams of college football. And then in a blink of an eye, Nick Saban gets to Alabama. And then the whole perception of the nation changes about the SEC, because within 3 years, Alabama's playing for a national championship. You know, they beat Texas, they go on and win it, and the dynasty starts. And now the SEC can think its supremacy and all like that to Nick Saban. Really, it should be called the Nick Saban Conference, because he's the one that put them back on the map to get them to the dominant thing. The ACC had a chance to do that when Bobby Bowden was running roughshod through the conference, when Bobby Bowden was running roughshod through the nation, and the ACC squandered that. They squandered that, and I will forever, ever, ever say it again. It is not the competition on the field. It is the competency in the leadership in the front office. That is what screwed the ACC, and they're not going to suffer the death of the Pac-12. I think they're too smart, too wise for what happened to the Pac-12, but they're going to forever be a second-rate, third-rate conference after Clemson and Florida State leaves this thing.
No, you're right, and I was just looking it up. I mean, because this is what's funny, where I know they have a better foundation now than they did before at Alabama, but a lot of people are like, okay, well, you know, Saban moves on, we're not going to miss a step. And it's like, people forget, man. I was just looking it up, and in the 10 years before Saban got there, they had more losing seasons than they did 10-win seasons.
Yes.
It has not always been that way. And it's just like the ACC had their opportunity, and like you said, they squandered it. And so now they're just going to have to sit in. Like you said, I don't think they're going to go, you know, the way of the dodo with the Pac-12. I just think it's, like you said, it's going to forever be that separate leg. And if we ever go to super conferences, maybe, who knows? Yeah, they may end up as like a G5 conference. It's hard to say, because I have seen where there's some reports that the SEC is kind of like, okay, well, what could we squeeze out of basketball for revenue?
Yeah.
You know, they're looking at UNC and Duke. Like, Duke is not even remotely valuable for football to them.
Absolutely,
but
nothing.
If you could grab two big basketball brands, you know, maybe that ups your academics a little bit. So, you know, it's just when Big Brother comes calling, they're going to poach the teams that they want.
Yeah.
And you'll see what happens when the dust settles. But, man, I think it's going to be interesting going forward how this all works out. But, you know, it's just when you look back at what the ACC could have been, man, it's kind of sad the way it turned out. And so, you know, it's going to change a lot going forward. But speaking of revenue, one of the next things that has been announced is corporate logos and corporate sponsorships allowed to come. I know they're talking about some of these conferences may even take on corporate sponsors. I saw someone was like, Ace Hardware would be good for like the ACC conference or something like that. Something crazy. So, but yeah, man, and they're going to allow them to put logos on the field, corporate logos on the field, like they do in the NFL. And so, man, that could be a big revenue generator. Yeah. That's just something that I think is worth mentioning, because if you remember back when all this lawsuit talk started, there was this thing that came out called Project Osceola, where they had looked at going into private equity and things like that. There was a lot of different things talked about in there. A lot of it was heavily redacted. But one of the things that had came out was they were going to explore naming rights for the Tucker Center, for possibly Doak Campbell Stadium. Yep. You know, when you're talking about, I think the Tucker Center was like 1 to 8 million a year or something like that. I'm like, why have we not named that already?
What are we waiting for?
Right. Like, let's do this. I mean, you know, congratulations for being important for a little while there, Doak, but you're out of here, buddy. We need like Bobby Bowdenfield at Seminole Hard Rock Stadium. You know,
let's go.
Let's take in that money. So, you know, I don't know what logo maybe you want to see on the field. You know, hey, look, I know it might be embarrassing, but I'll put that Spanx logo on the field, because that lady is a billionaire with a B. And she's an FSU alum. So, like, hey, come on, Spanx lady. Let's stop being tight in the – I don't know what Spanx are, but to be honest, Michael. Let's stop being tight in the waistline and the pocketbook, and let's start spreading the wealth a little bit here. You know, I don't really know what those are, but, you know, hey, I think it's like a girdle or something like that.
It's a ladies' wear for sure to give them a figure, I believe. I don't care what they call it. As long as that green is coming into FSU's pocketbooks, Let's just put it there. I mean, if Kim Kardashian wants to, if we want to have Bobby Bonfield at Kim Kardashian Stadium and they're going to pay all that, let's do it. Let's get it done. I mean,
write that check.
Write that check. The more money we can get into this program and to the athletic program, the better it'll allow us to compete with the big boys to stay as one of the blue bloods of college football. Yes, I don't care. Put whatever you on there. As long as it doesn't have devil or Satan or anything like that, yeah. I'm good to go. Let's go.
And I'm sorry, Spanx Lady. You know, we love your company. I just didn't know what they were. I'm probably busting out of anything that you got. So, you know, I don't think they have Spanx for men, but, you know, that would look like a busted can of biscuits on a hot day in the South. So I don't need those problems. But, you know, hey, if you want to write the check, yes. we'll cash it just as fast.
That's right.
So,
that's right.
But the last thing I want to get to here before we wrap this episode up, obviously, like we talked about, this is recruiting central time. This is one of the biggest months for recruiting that frankly, Mike Norvell has had at Florida State. So many big name recruits on campus here. And I got to be honest, Michael, most of you guys know that listen to us on a regular, we don't really get into the weeds in recruiting. We kind of talk about the commitments as they happen. I mean,
These
kids ain't loyal, buddy.
They ain't loyal.
I can't spend my whole summer figuring out where 17, 18-year-old kids are going their summer visits. Because, man, I mean, you look at the last kid that committed to Florida State, that was the 2026 commit. That lasted all of about 5 minutes. By the time he posted it, he had to basically delete it that he had already decommitted. So, man, it's just, I try and keep up with it. I used to do better. There's just so much stuff going on that it's like, at the same time, man, it takes so much time and investment to keep up with recruiting when you can't trust anything these kids say. Like, I mean, look at the KJ Bolden situation. Lied straight to the face of the media and then flipped on signing day. So it's like, man, they don't make them like Derwin James anymore, where he was committed in like eighth grade, FSU tattoo committed. Before he even like committed. So like, man, we will do our best to provide things like this. But also, I will say this on recruiting. You're going to get a lot of these guys on campus now. You want to get in a good position with them. But I wouldn't put anything one way or the other, especially for guys that are committed to other schools. And I know some people are worried about our class for 25 because it is kind of small. You don't have a whole lot of commitments right now. There's a lot of things that can change before early signing day. I mean, if you look at just some of the teams you're going up against, Florida. They could have a new coach by the time things are. Billy Napier could very well be fired this year. South Carolina, that's another team. Shane Beamer, they might not make a bowl this year.
He should be fired. Yes.
They could fire that coach as well. You know, Mac Brown is 900 years old in North Carolina. How many more 8-5 seasons are they going to put up with before they move on to somebody else? So the good thing is, through all this, you feel like one of the most stable programs in your primary recruiting area. Right. So now that you have success on the field, you can kind of fight off some of those northern teams as well. I mean, you got Michigan, who just made a coaching change. So you should have more ties into the state. Frankly, Ohio State, man, I don't know what's going on up there. But like Ryan Day is like the most successful coach to be on the hot seat that I've ever heard of. And like if he don't produce this year after going all in, they could be looking at a coaching change in the near future. So many things can change with recruiting that we don't really get into the weeds. Hey, if you're listening to this and you like spending your time knee deep in recruiting, shoot us a message. I'll let you cover recruiting for us.
Yeah,
I could use the help. I do everything I can, but I will say that we know the staff does good at recruiting. They take a little bit of a different approach when it comes to recruiting. I mean, you know, not to change the subject, but man, this is kind of why I still love college baseball. There's still a little bit of purity to the sport. You don't have like Texas where they're lining up six Lambos into the facility for kids on recruiting trips. Like, we have moved so far past cash and McDonald's bags that it doesn't even make sense. So, you're not going to see that in Tallahassee. And these guys, you know, they come in on recruiting visits and they're making them work. You know, they're showing them how they can get them better. So, you hope that from what I've heard and read, that maybe we don't see a lot of immediate commitments, but they're making good ground with a lot of big name guys. And I think this year they're going after those bigger fish, because I think one of the mistakes that the staff made early on, especially that Willie Taggart made as well, they went big game hunting when they didn't have the rifle to get it. You know what I mean? To land the kill. And so they had to adjust. They learned to adjust to what they could get. And so now I think that you've seen the success. They can get these guys. So now you are going to see them go for this big game hunting. But that takes longer to develop. That takes longer to land these guys. And so we're going to see a lot come out of this weekend, some news and notes, you know, with the guys that cover that on the beat. But man, I'm excited to see the ground that they make up, because as much as we may be a little bit hands-off with recruiting, it still is the lifeblood of college football. Oh, yeah, and so hopefully absolutely. We do get some commitments to talk about after this month.
Well, since the introduction of NIL, I mean, excitement around recruiting has been on the downswing across the nation. I mean, every college football fan would tell you that, you know, in the 90s, man, we were following recruiting like it was like life or death. Every time we'd hear about a recruit, we'd go and try to learn as much as we possibly could and show up at, I mean, I remember I was going to games just to try to see this recruit that Bobby was recruiting and stuff. And so, but as the time has gone on, as the ages come on, especially with the introduction of the transfer portal and NIL, it, like you said, it's so hard to take the words of these 17, 18 year old kids that they're going to be in this thing forever, because we know they could sign a national letter of intent and then turn around literally the next day and ask out of it. And there are very few coaches that won't let a kid out of its, you know, NLI. And then he'll be at another school, or he'll come, he'll be a freshman here, and then he'll transfer out. And or you hear reports about, I was thinking about this the other day, Jesse, about how I was thinking about this in basketball recruiting, but also it's true in football. You know, these coaches are offering these players, you know, supposedly $1 to $2 million. And I'm like, these kids haven't done a darn thing in college football yet. And we're offering them seven figure salaries, NIL opportunities before they've done it. There should be a rule that coming out of college, you should not get NIL. I know I sound like an old fogey right now. I really do. But you should not get NIL until after like the fall season. And then you should be eligible for that. Because why are we paying a kid who's done nothing? Nothing. Like, they should get the money from the NCAA. That should be the only money they get, because they are their image is being used. But they should not be able to get NIL until they've at least had a season of college football where they've done something that then you can actually assess the value of what they bring to the table, right? Because at least with the NFL, when players are coming out of college, they there's a marketing value that they're really paying for do that. These high school players have done nothing. Their names are barely even known. So that's the one thing. The other thing is, this is, like you said, this is a huge weekend. It's FSU mega weekend before the dead period. These players are going to come. I know there's a lot of concern out there of like, man, you're looking at Ohio State, you're looking at Michigan, you're looking at Alabama. They're getting all these players. They're getting all this time. Well, you have to also understand, we're going into year five of Mike Norvell. Year five, okay? We've had two seasons of 10-plus wins. We went undefeated last season. We got the best recruiting class we've had under Mike Norvell last season. We're building this thing. Also, Ohio State, who's basically, it seems like every other day they're getting a five-star recruit, they have a legacy of winning, of bringing in these players. Mike and them, like you said, I love the analogy that, you know, early on, what Willie Taggart made the mistake, what Mike Norvell made the mistake is, they tried to hunt a 9-point buck with a BB gun. You can't do that. You're not going to do a thing. Well, now they actually have the gun to go get that 9-point buck, but they are going to be very selective. They're going to get the right player that fits the system right way, that can be coached the right way. They're not going to go sign every single 5-star player out there. Those days are gone you're signing just whatever you can get, and then you'll figure out along the way. No. They're going to be strategic about the players they recruit, the players they get. And I believe that at the end of the season, when we get to the signing day again, we're going to look back and say, man, aren't we glad that these are the type of players that Mike Norvell is signing, because they're treating this like an NFL team. In NFL, you don't just go out and get any player, any free agent. No, you scout, you look, you see, do they fit what we're trying to do here? And I think that's what you're seeing with Mike Norvell and this coaching staff.
Right. And I mean, the crazy thing is, talking about NIL, you know, Florida high school athletics, just, I think they just passed a thing where now you can have NIL in high school. It's crazy. There have been rumors where kids ask for $50,000 for an official visit.
That's ridiculous.
That is insane. And to be honest, you know, look, this is old man yelling at the sky.
Yep.
That turns me off from college football.
Oh, man.
I'm not going to lie. Like, I know the players are getting paid. I'm all for it.
I'm all for it.
Like you said, you got guys that are being negotiated with multi-million dollar, in some cases, contracts that have done nothing.
Nothing.
And the crazy thing is, why I don't really get crazy into recruiting is because even if you land the guys, there's no guarantee they're ever going to see the field for you because you can get them in 1 year and then they're gone the next. Never know. I get more excited over transfer portal guys.
Yes.
It's more of a straightforward process. It's like, okay, they're visiting, they're interested, they sign. Boom. Let's go to work. And that's the way it works. But I also think, too, when you look at this, the way they recruit, fit and family does mean a lot to them.
Yes.
And the reason I like that is because you haven't really seen Florida State lose a lot in the portal. Most of the guys that left weren't impact guys, maybe didn't have a great influence on the locker room in certain ways. And a lot of those weren't Mike Norvell guys. So now that you are a little more choosy in what you bring in, you're going to still sign the three stars. You're still going to sign some of those guys for depth purposes, but you're going to get some 4 and 5 stars. But if you can get the guys like Charles Lester, you know, this is a very high profile DB. He played some games with us towards the end. He made us get in our emotions and our feelings a little bit, but he still came through. He's still a Seminole. Still, you know, he was committed for a long time, and he stuck through the process. You still have guys like that you want to be part of your program. The things that Travis Hunter and KJ Bolden pulled and all that type of stuff, man, I know you got to say, like, I want the 5 stars on this program, but it doesn't break my heart to see those guys go somewhere else if they're going to be a problem, because we've seen, like, this offseason, man, almost nobody left this program. We thought we were going to lose 10 plus guys and almost nobody left. So that's what you get by building the culture on top of just going out and getting these recruits, because, you know, there's a lot of guys, and Jimbo was apparently from what I've always heard, notorious for this too. You just basically pull up 247's recruiting rankings and just go offer the highest ranked guys. And you know, I think a lot of guys do that. And then you also have a lot of those turn out to where they leave the program or they don't work out or they're bad for the locker room or whatever the case may be. And so I like their recruiting style. It's not the flashiest, but I think you know who you're going to get is a good fit, and they're going to hopefully stay in the boat. Man, we'll just see how things play out over this last week before the dead period. You just hope that they can get some good ground made up with some of these guys. And then if you just put together another good season, I mean, if you go 10 plus wins, possibly win the ACC and possibly get into the playoffs this season. I mean, again, you are selling that proof of concept. You are selling that you can do it if you feature a couple high school guys too. So, man, I'm excited to see how these visits play out. Yeah. It's just we're not going to go into the weeds like some of the other outlets because, you know, frankly, man, like I'm trying to figure out where I'm going this weekend. Yeah. Not necessarily where the 17-year-old kid is visiting who's not even committed. But, So, like, that's pretty much going to wrap it up for here, guys. Obviously, we will be back next week. You know, now that things are settled back down a little bit, baseball's over. We've been really just trying to hammer that out because, man, it was really fun to watch. I mean,
it was.
If that team did nothing else, they reignited a passion for baseball amongst this fan base.
Yes,
and I think you have to be grateful for that. But starting next week, man, we're all in on football. It is go time. And although it's a little bit slow right now, we're working on some things for some shows coming up that I know you guys are going to enjoy. So make sure you check back for that. Like and subscribe. If you watch this video this long, then you must like something we got to say. So drop a like and subscribe. You know, drop a comment as well on maybe a recruit that you're looking forward to Florida State landing. And I will say to the recruiting tip, they are going about this a smart way. They have a lot. This could be a really, really good offensive line class for Florida State. And they also are in it for some good defensive linemen, too. Those are typically the places where it's hard to get people out of the portal. You know, they are covering their bases. Like, okay, so if we can build the places that you can't really build out of the portal, out of high school, and then go, you know, there's receivers are a dime a dozen. Running backs are probably the same way in the portal year in and year out. You don't find too many dominant offensive linemen. If you could put together a class with multiple 4 and 5 star blue chip offensive linemen, man, that's really going to pay dividends going forward. Because like you said, it's like an NFL roster management. And so that's just one thing I want to touch on before we get out of here. But again, guys, thank you so much for tuning in. Go check out Alumni Hall FSU to support those that support us. Use code SPEAR to get 10% off, and we will catch you guys on the next one.